which I'd really love to see. I wonder if it's like a piece of cardboard with glue and glitter sprinkled on it. A certificate, and of course, the glory of such an illustrious win. So I thought that today I would go over the various categories fairly briefly and the different types of studies that won for those various categories. So there are about 10 categories this year, and they mirror a lot of the Nobel categories. The first one is medicine, and this went to Brain Whitcomb and Dan Mayer for their probing work on the health consequences of swallowing a sword. Who'd have thought? They looked at professional sword swallowers, and they tested how much damage these sword swallowers did. And in fact, they found that it's okay to swallow a sword if you know what you're doing, but their findings suggested that sword swallowers should not swallow swords if they already had a sore throat. They shouldn't swallow strangely shaped blades. And another thing that could cause injury was being distracted while swallowing a sword. For physics, a U.S. and Chile team solved a problem about how sheets become wrinkled. And I'd like them to solve the problem about how I can make my bed without actually making it. That would be the next step for me. Applied sciences. Biology is another sort of bed-related thing. Dr. Johanna van Bronswijk of the Netherlands won the award for carrying out a census of all the mites, insects, spiders, ferns and fungi that are present in your bed. Pretty gross. Following on from that, we have chemistry. From Japan, a researcher developed a method. This is very creative. For extracting vanilla fragrance and flavoring from cow dung. I think we did a poo show a while back. We, you know, could include this in a future poo show. For linguistics, this rocked my world. University of Barcelona team showed that rats are unable to tell the difference between a person speaking Japanese backwards and someone speaking Dutch backwards.
My biggest concern about all of these experiments, and they're making me laugh and they are making me think, but my biggest concern is definitely where the funding is coming from this sort of thing.
Well, I was kind of wondering that about the 5-second rule too. I mean, would that be like an Institute of Health Research that would give money for that?
I mean, to be fair, it probably wasn't a very expensive experiment to conduct, although possibly a bit time consuming. But I mean, are we talking about taxpayers' dollars here, testing whether rats can tell the difference between Japanese and Dutch backwards? I don't know if I could.
I wonder sometimes if these are offshoots. Like, they're doing research, and it's looking at cognition and language development, and they just happen to find that rats can't tell the difference. So they think, what the hell? And they write a little 2-page paper or something. And
we all need publications, hey?
Exactly. I mean, no one reads the title right. They just want to count them up. So moving on, Peace was one of my favorites. The U.S. Air Force Wright Laboratory investigated research and development on a chemical weapon that would provoke widespread homosexual behavior among enemy troops. Unfortunately, the organizers could not track down the authors of this research to give them their award, but the whole gist of this was basically that if you can cause your enemies to have unrestrained, uncontrollable lust for one another, they'll be too busy making love to make some war. The project was apparently called Harassing, Annoying, and quote-unquote Bad Guy Identifying Chemicals. The last three are in nutrition. Brian Wansink of Cornell tested the limits of human appetite by feeding volunteers a self-refilling bottomless bowl of soup. Economics, researchers out of Taiwan patented a device that can catch bank robbers by dropping a net over them. Sounds a bit Spider-Man. And aviation, this is a cute one. The final Ig Nobel Award went to a National University of Quilmes, Argentina team for discovering that impotency drugs can help hamsters to recover from jet lag. So well done, all the Ig Nobel winners. And in the spirit of the Peace Award and the quote-unquote gay bomb science. This is Metric with their song, Sick Sexy.
Lonesome for no one when the room was empty. For us we knew it was obsolete. Nothing could be complete denial. All we do is talk, sit, switch screens as the homeland plans enemies. All we do is talk, static split screens as the homeland plans enemies.
Fred Durst?
He's like Iggy.
Oh, you are sorely mistaken. I
play something from $3 Bill, y'all.
What is that?
That's the landmark Limp Bizkit album.
Limp Bizkit? Oh my God! I mean,
Wait, you don't agree that those are the most crucial grooves you've heard since Funkadelic?
What, Limp Bizkit grooves? Absolutely.
It's like
know.
The ultimate cross between Funkadelic and Rob Tyner.
Yeah, no, I don't agree at all.
Oh, you do not deserve a radio show.
CITR 101.9 FM, your crucial groove station.
It's just a lot of BS.
Hi, and thanks for sticking with us here on My Science Project. Today it's been the Old Wives Tale and Science Awards Show, and you just heard the rundown of the Ig Nobel Prize winners, and in just a few minutes, Julia is going to let us know about the true Nobel Prize winners, particularly those you may not have already heard about. But I just wanted to add that I think it was in 2004, a couple researchers from UBC actually won one of the Ig Nobel Prizes, and that was for their research on the fact that herrings communicate by farting. So I'm glad I wasn't doing field research on that. And Julie, are you there?
I am indeed.
Can you bring the maturity level up a little bit here?
I can try. No guarantees. I'm not going to go through all of the Nobels, but two that stuck out were one that I think probably some people have heard about because it was it was quite surprising and yet not at the same time. But that was Al Gore's win.
Mm-hmm.
He won the Peace Prize, the Nobel Peace Prize, for his work on global warming. And he shared this award with the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or the ICPP. And Gore meaningfully called the ICPP the world's preeminent scientific body devoted to improving our understanding of climate crisis. What I think a lot of us hope with this award is that it will further convince remaining doubters that this is a real issue that needs to be acted upon, and that, as Al Gore advocates, that global warming and climate change is not a political issue but a worldwide crisis. The Nobel Committee gave Gore this award because they said that he is probably the single individual who has done most to create greater worldwide understanding of the measures that need to be adopted to either address or reverse or somehow cope with climate change. An interesting side note to this is that a Canadian climate change campaigner named Sheila Watt Cloutier was also nominated jointly with Gore for this Nobel Peace Prize. And she very graciously said that she was pleased that Gore and the IPCC had won this honor. Another side note in this is the Nobel Committee actually addressed ideas that they were criticizing the Bush administration, who have thus far basically ignored the Kyoto Protocol. And the Nobel Committee responded by saying that the award was not a criticism of anything, and that instead it was encouragement and praise for positive actions done. But you might be able to read in that the suggestion that maybe the Bush administration should change their tack. Another award that I thought was neat, and I actually just taught a lecture, an undergraduate lecture on the mouse as an animal research model, and I was very pleased that this had come out. It was very timely because I mentioned it in my lecture to the students, that the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine was awarded to three research scientists who pioneered transgenic mice. And this is Mario Capecchi, Sir Martin Evans, and Oliver Smithies. And the three of them actually rather independently devised various techniques that are now completely standard and commonplace. We talk about research that uses mice models constantly on this show, and often these models involve gene knockouts or knockdowns, where either gene expression is eliminated completely or compromised, or you can even do a mouse knock-in where you stick in some genetic expression where it normally isn't. So this stuff has had a huge impact on how we understand how genes work in our bodies. And the first knockout mouse publication was actually back in 1989. And a lot of people have been expecting this win for a long time. In fact, some people said that it was quite a surprise that these three scientists hadn't been awarded the Nobel for their work already. Then another little bit of Nobel news that is not exactly a Nobel Prize itself, but an interesting tidbit. If you have an interest in what the Nobels are like, or if you know a budding scientist or are one and would like to read about the journey of one scientist from sort of rural, most rural possible Australia to Stockholm as a Nobel winner, Peter Doherty was the co-winner of the 1996 Nobel Prize in Medicine or Physiology, like the fellows who just got it for the transgenic mice. And he wrote and published a book called The Beginner's Guide to Winning the Nobel Prize. And this is an interesting book that, as I said, charts his development as a scientist and how he got into what he got into and how he found himself being awarded this for his work. And I believe it was immunology. And he ends the book with some tips on how to win a Nobel Prize. I haven't read the book myself, but I'm kind of curious what kind of tips those are. But, if you're interested in Peter Doherty's book, The Beginner's Guide to Winning the Nobel Prize, it's certainly available where you would normally go for your books.
Now, the other thing that we're going to jump into today is this whole idea of science charlatans, or, you know, the folks out there who are using scientific claims to advertise or market or sell their otherwise unscientific products. And Julia, I don't know if you're anything like me, but every once in a while when I'm walking through the cosmetics section and department store of some kind, I see all these signs ensuring that this cream or this lotion is going to reverse aging. I'm thinking, yeah, right, let's find out more about that. And every once in a while, I actually don't have anything better to do. And I'll wander up to the poor, unsuspecting salesperson at the counter and start to ask a few questions about exactly how these things work. And it doesn't take very long before you realize that nobody really very few people understand the science behind the products that they're selling, or even the science behind the claims that they're making with these products. And it kind of gets to me sometimes. But what I've learned recently is that I'm by far alone in this. There's a group called Sense About Science from the United Kingdom. They're based in London, and they're an independent charitable trust. And their prime goal is to respond to the misrepresentation of science and scientific evidence on issues that matter to society. So that may be cosmetics, but it might also be about vaccines or about genetic modification or about stem cell research or much bigger issues like that. Recently, they've been pouring their attention into issues regarding alternative medicine, MRIs, these detox products, nuclear power, and all kinds of other things. And really what they do is try to provide sound, understandable scientific background to these subjects that can sometimes be clouded by false claims. And it's an extremely accessible organization. You can find them online at senseaboutscience.org. And they also have a phone number that's freely available on that website. Because what they want to be is a resource for all people, whether you're a journalist, a local authority, a parliamentarian, a healthcare provider, just about any groups that might have a need for better understanding of science and how it affects their issues, you can get in touch and quickly be put in contact with experts that are able to answer your question from a scientific point of view. They're also the home to a team of young researchers that go by the name of VOICE, or Voice of Young Scientists. And this is a program that helps scientists in their early stages of their career to get actively involved in the public debate about science. And it offers workshops on how to interact with the media, how to speak or write for the general audience, and other issues related to science reporting. And they got together recently, and they really did what I just described, that I kind of do for fun every now and then. And they identified some of the most the biggest concerns they had in scientific false marketing. And they made some phone calls. And their phone calls were transcribed and pulled together in a book called There Goes the Science Bit. And so they did that by contacting numerous organizations that use dubious scientific claims to advertise their products. And all the phone calls were placed by scientists, all the conversations were transcribed, and what they tried to do in the discussions over the phone was to identify whether there really is any true scientific evidence behind the claims that are being made. And what they hope is that their work will encourage other people to ask these questions, to be skeptical, and to demand sound evidence in the products that they're buying. You know, that's just one example of some of the projects that are going on at Sense About Science. So once again, if you want to find out a bit more about that, check out www.senseaboutscience.org. Now, Julia, you said you'd come across something that kind of shocked the pants off you that falls into this category.
Yeah, no, I did. And actually, I kind of have three short stories to share along those lines. And I never accosted someone in a drugstore about cosmetic products, although I've certainly wanted to at some point or other. And I called Procter & Gamble the other week to ask them about, there's a chemical called paraben that's used in a lot of skincare products, and I think it's been linked with cancer. Mm. So I use one of Procter & Gamble's products every day. So I called to find out, and I was just basically told that it was in there at safe levels. And that was it. And, like, there was no reference to a publication. There was no note about combining products or amounts. And so I thought, when I read about the Sense About Science, I thought, well, maybe I should call back and hassle them. The other thing that I did was, a few years back, I volunteered to do some product testing for Elle Magazine Canada. And they shipped me a crate of night creams. It was really fun. I got, like, probably hundreds of dollars worth of night cream. And I had to, like, make notes and use them for a set period of time and every night. And I found, like, they did bugger all. And some of these I know, because I peeled the labels off after the study to see what they were. And some of them were pretty expensive stuff. But I would say that, well, maybe one or two of the 10 seemed a bit better. And granted, I'm not an old hag yet. But, I mean, most of them, I wouldn't spend the money. I wouldn't say it was worth it. But the thing that really knocked my socks off that you were mentioning before is an ad that I saw in Style magazine that I bought a while back, earlier this year, I think, in the winter, by Clarins Paris, which is a cosmetics company. And this, I only saw these ads for a brief time, and maybe they got yanked because they were so full of crap. But this was Expertise 3P, Polypollution Protection, a spritz that looks like water and apparently feels like water, which makes you wonder what it is. And the tagline in the ad says that we are surrounded by artificial electromagnetic waves generated by a host of modern-day devices used for the transmission of sound and images. And the first thing that got me was the idea of artificial electromagnetic waves. Like, what's the difference between a real one and an artificial one? So then I read on about these awful electromagnetic waves, these pseudo waves, and apparently they certainly have no trouble getting into our skin, says the ad. But for the very first time, Clarins Research has created this new E3P solution that you can spritz on your face, and it will apparently block out these artificial electromagnetic waves, because a few hours of daily exposure is, according to them, enough to provoke a notable change in the skin's natural barrier effect. I don't know what a natural barrier effect is.
That's just the thing. These are the kinds of questions that would be asked on the phone if you could call these people up. And it's not that I think Sense About Science or even you or I would want to, you know, be aggressive or embarrass these companies. It's just more wanting to understand what it is they're trying to say, trying to take the public a little bit more seriously, give them a little bit more respect.
Yeah, I mean, in the case of Clarins, I think this is really just, it's almost insulting. But I'm not a physicist, so I mean, I really can't sit here and say that I know everything about electromagnetic waves and artificial versus genuine ones. But it certainly does make you wonder, and it does make you feel like you're being thought of as rather stupid.
At the end of the day, I think in order to truly believe and accept information that were provided by scientists, we have to trust them. And if they're kind of getting tied up in bizarre marketing ploys, using words that really don't have a whole lot of meaning, it won't be long before it's difficult to trust any scientist at all.
Yeah, and I think that the public is clever enough that if you give decent evidence and your product works, then you should see the sales of your product reflect that. And it raises flags when you get a whole bunch of sort of jargony stuff that doesn't seem to ring true.
I think just bringing us back a bit to Al Gore, our Nobel Prize winner of the season, I thought that he did that exceptionally well in his film, in treating the audience with respect and showing difficult science, difficult concepts, and just being straight up about it and using understandable language to discuss it. And I think that's something that's got to be consistently done with science.
Definitely. Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. Anyhow, here's a new science-y song that I've just discovered recently. It's by an anti-folk artist from the U.S. Her name is Kimya Dawson, and this song has got some cute lines about chemistry and what you may have learned in high school. The tune is called Chemistry, and this is Kimya Dawson.
My head is in the sand. I said, how did we end up here? You said happenstance, and I didn't understand. So I made other plans, and I ran to the ocean, washed the blood off of my hands. I washed away my tears, washed away 10 years, washed away the empty space in between my ears. And you said, all that I mean is that you and me didn't meet because of fate, but rather probability. And you said the truth's like corn and lies are like weeds. You said the Schrodinger equation collapsed perfectly. And I said, mercy me, be patient please, 'cause I don't know a goddamn thing about the birds and the bees. I just know what I'm
what I see, even though it's hard to see because you just blinded me. And if there's one thing I learned in chemistry, it's that the gain of electrons is reduction, obviously. But you can't see electrons without machines, and you can't tell from my inflection if I'm being mean. And I don't know if I can take you seriously. Sometimes elections depend on the absentees and my family and my friends and all the little kids that love me make me strong. And no matter how this ends, I know I'll never, ever, ever be alone. Someday I'll be an old lady with a big dress and an apron, a babushka and bare feet. I'll be out in my garden on my hands and knees, and I'll be singing a song that is really sad and sweet.
Holy smokes! I can't believe I'm part of the coolest club in the world!
Bub?
Yeah?
So, what club is that?
CITR! As a club member, I get ginormous discounts on the Friends of CITR card, which in itself, Timmy, I must say, is pretty amazing. I get dirt cheap prices at stores and shots I'm at all the time anyway! To be honest, it feels like being in a club within a club!
Wow. Hey, I want a Friends of CITR card.
You don't even have to be a member to get one, although clearly you'd be that much cooler if you were a member. Go purchase your Friends of CITR card down at CITR, or at special events they sponsor, such as concerts, membership drives, and shindig.
I got it. It feels like having special powers. I go into stores and bam! Discounts.
Tis what I said.
Hi, welcome back to My Science Project. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And today on My Science Project, Julie and I have been joining forces to talk about all kinds of awards in science, as well as some weird and bizarre tests of old wives' tales. And we're coming down to the last few minutes of our show, but Julie and I both have a few events that we want to share with you, and I'll start out with some of the events with a Vancouver local flavor before I hand off to Julia for some more events with a Calgary flavor. So to start off with, you may have already heard a little bit that Science World has launched an evening event series for adults called Science World After Dark. And so if you wander on down to Science World on Friday night, for example, this Friday night, October 19th, from 6:30 to 10 p.m., you can enjoy a late night in the museum with a glass of wine or two. So it's a great way to be exploring Science World, and certainly one that will be void of small people if that improves the sounds of things to you at all. And there's all kinds of things happening around town in the near future. One that really caught my eye is being initiated by the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research, and it's a public forum called The Next Big Question. It's going to take place on November 1st to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research. And what it is a series of six public forums across the country to get Canadians talking about big questions that the world will face, and to engage the audience in a conversation about those questions. So it's really an interactive event. And on Thursday, November 1st at 4:30 p.m. At the Scotiabank Theatre, 900 Burrard Street, the big questions that will be asked are, first of all, how do microbes change the world? And that will be presented by Curtis Suttle of UBC, who's an expert on viruses in the ocean. The next big question of that event is, what makes people happy? and that will be presented by Dr. John Helliwell, pioneer in incorporating well-being into economics. And finally, How Do Nature and Nurture Consort? And that is presented by Brian Kolb, founding father of behavioral neuroscience. So that promises to be a high-caliber event that I would recommend checking out. And another event that happens, where's the date on this one? Another event happening on October 30th from 7:30 to 9 p.m. is, my papers are all shuffled, is another open forum called Leading by Example in the Fight Against AIDS, a dialogue on the Ethiopian-Israeli experience. And that takes place Tuesday, October 30th from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Gordon and Leslie Diamond Healthcare Center. Now, finally, I promised to let you know a bit about the Gairdner Lectures that are touring across the country and will indeed have a stop in Calgary that Julia will mention. But first of all, just to give you a bit of a background, the Gairdner Foundation was created in 1957 by James Arthur Gairdner to recognize and reward the achievements of medical researchers whose work contributes significantly to improving the quality of human life. And James Gairdner was not a scientist himself, though he was a good scholar. He was actually in investments and was a successful stockbroker and industrialist. Nevertheless, throughout his life, he was interested in clinical medicine and medical research and had a number of friends in those fields. And one particular friend, Dr. Wallace Graham, is attributed to encouraging him to set up this foundation to award research in medical in the medical field. What's important to know as well is that a high percentage of the Gairdner Prize winners go on to receive the Nobel Prize, so really it sort of serves as a bit of a pre-screening. And if you're interested in seeing the two speakers who will be in Vancouver, you should go to the Life Sciences Institute from 4 to 6 p.m. on October 22nd, where you'll have an opportunity to see Dr. C. David Alice, and he's recognized for his studies demonstrating the link between chromatin structure and gene transcription, and that is followed by Dr. Harry F. Noller and his studies on the structure and function of the ribosome. So that's the Gairdner Lectures on October 22nd from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Life Sciences Institute. And Julia, the Gairdner Lecture will be in Calgary as well, is that right?
It will be, actually, the following day on October 23rd. And I think we have, this is weird, but I think we have three different speakers.
Well, there's more than two winners in a given year. I think there can be, I think the number is actually open for debate, but I think this year there's definitely more than two, so maybe you've got a different subset.
Yeah, I think we do, and I'm sorry, I don't have the exact details, but I do know that we've got three speakers on October 23rd. Again, the event is free, and it's being held on the University of Calgary Foothills Hospital Complex, and that's in the Live and Lecture Theater for anyone who might know U of C or be listening and want to go. So that's October 23rd, where we have the Gairdner Lecture. And another event that's coming up that I thought was super cool is that on October 27th, the 15th annual Chemistry in the Mall event is being held not so far away from the University of Calgary at a local mall called Market Mall, for those of you who would know it. The event coincides with National Chemistry Week, which is held the fourth week of October each year. This Chemistry in the Mall event includes more than 100 volunteer undergrad and grad students, professors, and chemistry professionals flaunting their chemistry skills to promote appreciation of chemistry in everyday life and the importance of chemistry research, and also to help make science more public friendly. Last year, this event was really successful. In fact, more than 3,000 people took part, so I imagine this year will be just as well attended, if not more. And examples of experiments are things like Try This at Home, which is always fun, Crystal Garden, which I can never actually do that. I'd love to know how to do that. Electrochemistry, photochemistry, smell, and, of course, slime. There will also be posters from the local Canadian Society of Chemistry School's poster competition. And if you'd like more information about this event or about National Chemistry Week in general, then you can go to chemistryweek.org, chemistryweek.org for all your chemistry needs.
So what's most exciting about that is that it's Chemistry in the Mall. which makes me giggle.
Yeah,
no wonder
yeah.
it's such a success.
Yeah, it's not just teenagers flirting.
So much more. There's chemicals involved. Anyway, it's time for us to sign off. And Julia, thanks so much for joining me today. It's great to have you on the phone, if not closer.
Yes, it's been tons of fun. Thank you for bearing with me and my phone.